I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
Ah, yes, it's Thursday. Bum-ba-da-bum-bum. You almost made it to the end of your week. My week here on the radio ends tonight, so thanks for hanging out with me. We got a great show, but also a really important show. Tonight we're going to be talking a lot about STDs and STIs. This is something that's important, even for those that feel like it isn't relevant to their life. It is. It's something that we're all part of culturally and socially, and for anyone out there doing anything that's relational or sexual, it's a topic that you are intersecting with, and so it's important. But later in the show, we're talking to Janelle Marie Pierce, the executive director of the STD Project, talk about STIs, STDs, dating, et cetera, et cetera. Really important. That'll be coming up next. And also our question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, have you ever dated or suffered from narcissistic abuse? Yeah, we were talking about that last night and the night before a little bit. So we want to hear your stories. Very difficult personality style to date. And as I was saying last night, I think it was last night, we're all on that continuum, right? We all have that narcissism. It's just a matter of how much. And I was also trying to give us a little more empathy that people are usually socialized a certain way. And what we call personality disorders, which again, we all have components of, it's usually a response to trauma, right? It's not necessarily a personality choice that people choose. It creates problems in their lives and everyone else's as well. So let's bring some sympathy to that. Also, it's Thursday night. We'll be doing a little couples therapy with Rebecca Shida. We'll be doing that weekly, breaking down some of the main topics and issues that the couples that are in our practices come in and struggle with, trying to make sense of all those things, freak on the street. But also, I want to talk about something quickly that's important. It's called I'm Listening. Coming up on National Suicide Awareness Week. So this Sunday, September 8th, starting at 7 p.m. and I'll be going live at 7 a.m. I'll be going live at 9 a.m. on all of our Entercom platforms. That means AMP, K-Rock, Channel Q, K-Earth, The Wave. Going to be talking about destigmatizing mental health and also suicide prevention. And again, another really, really important topic. So tune in. Again, that goes live at 7 a.m. and I'll be jumping in on a panel at 9 a.m. And of course, afterwards, we'll be blasting that for those that aren't able to listen. But again, it's going to be on all the Entercom stations. So hang out with us, check us out. Really, really important topic. Also, as always, Channel Q, they got the summer party going for you, and this time it's in Vegas. We're giving away 5 trips to Vegas for the Life is Beautiful Musical and Arts Festival, plus access to the pool party. Now, this is a big deal, because not only are we going to put you up at the Downtown Grand Hotel and Casino, bam, 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 that's going to be the, Planet Hollywood, but the people that are performing at this event are Billie Eilish, Post Malone, Rufus Del Sol, Carly Rae Jepsen, Griffin, King Princess, Janelle Monáe. They've got something for everybody. And at the pool party, we got my man, Shalou. That music is what gets me through my day. I'm not even kidding. I'm such a big fan of his music. Channel Q's Sunny Funny Rooftop Pool Party. That's what we'll be kicking you to. Just got to head over to We Are Channel Q to register to win. It's that easy. I'm going to be on there trying to win myself because I need a Vegas trip. Vegas, if they'll have me back. Okay, so sexual health. Let's get into it quickly. Sexual health often is talked about as use condoms, get tested regularly. Look, all important things, but there's a couple other components we need to discuss. First off, confidence. Your ability to confidently discuss sex, safer sex, your body, what you desire and all that, ask questions. That's going to be one of your number one most important forms of sexual health and sexual wellness. Just being able to talk confidently about these topics. Start practicing. I think that's one of the biggest goals of all of my work, my books, but also here, Loveline, is we're trying to get people confident talking about their bodies, sexuality, relationality, gender, really trying to normalize those terms in this conversation. And also just talking about what levels of risk are okay for you sexually. So that's uber, uber important. And also, as always, we're talking about PrEP, but also we're trying to talk more about TASP, which stands for treatment as protection. And as you all know, if you've been listening, undetectable means untransmittable. If you are seeking treatment and taking your meds and the viral load is undetectable, it is not possible, and this is coming from the CDC, to transmit HIV. We also have PrEP. We also have PEP, which is for post-exposure. But lube matters. What? Yeah, yeah. Lube is part of sexual health and wellness. It is good to make sure you know the kind of lube, water-based, that doesn't erode sex toys and condoms. Also, clean up. As always, I'm reminding y'all to clean your sex toys after each use and after going from person to person and certain body cavities to other body cavities. You can go to your local sex shop, go online and buy them little handy wipes. You can have a little by the bed. You know, I got a whole one of those little, what do you call them? Little things that you pull them out of the thingy thing, those rolls. But also I want to talk about this last piece that we don't talk enough about when we talk about sexual health and wellness. Care and ethics. That matters. How you're caring for yourself, but more importantly, how you're caring for the people that you're having sex with. What I mean by care is understanding that you're having sex with a human being. And the goal is to have them walk away from having interacted with you, feeling better about themselves, the world, about sex, about their body, not leaving them worse off. So we're not shaming people, right? We're really paying attention to the way that we interact with people that enter our lives. I think that's one of the things that's left out is we talk about safer sex and we think about all the physical components, but we leave out the emotional component because safe sex, quote unquote, is sex that leaves us feeling better about ourselves, at least neutral, as I say, but better, right? Like, what is the point of sexuality? Fun, pleasure, nourishment, intimacy, connection, entertainment, even employment, but we want it to still have a positive component to it. So if your sexuality is something where you're having sex with people that you're walking away feeling worse about yourself and your body, or you're not having the kind of sex you want to have, then you're not necessarily focusing on sexual health and wellness. Like, pleasure is a really key piece that's left out, but more importantly, ethics and emotionality and compassion and care. And that's kind of one of the things I'm going to keep reminding us to nauseam. So we got to talk more about that, right? But as always, what was I going to say there? Getting tested frequently. And remember, regardless of anatomy, gender expression, your age, all these things matter, right? All right, we're going to take a moment away, but coming up next, we're going to be Janelle Marie Pierce of the STD Project and also a spokesperson for PositiveSingles.com, a website for dating for those that are positive. Join us. Stick around. Don't change the dial. Don't turn off the radio. Listening to Love Live with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and Radio.com. All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page, so weigh in on that. But more importantly, right now, we're with Janelle Marie Pierce, the executive director of the STD Project, founder of HANDS, Herpes Activist Network to Dismantle Stigmas, and also spokesperson for PositiveSingles.com. Welcome to Loveline. How are you?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I am doing well.
Yeah, first off, I want to just say thank you for the work that you're doing. I think it's so valuable and also an important resource that I have sent clients in my private practice to.
I'm so glad to hear that. You're so very welcome, and thank you for sending people to these resources. It brings me endless joy every single day. I feel like I'm creating resources that I needed so desperately when I was 16 years old, and getting those messages and hearing someone such as yourself say that just makes it all worthwhile. All of that emotional labor, it makes it worth it.
Yeah, and we need those reminders because I can't even imagine what that's like, because I follow you on social media, and not only do you try to bring, you know, the statistical and the clinical and the resources, but you also always weave in like a really personal, vulnerable part of yourself into it all. And I think that's what's so impactful, but we also have to just, you know, give you a little support around, like you said, the emotional labor of that. So can you give just my listeners a quick little background as to what kind of brought you to this work?
Yeah, great question. So when I was 16 years old, I was diagnosed with genital herpes, and it was a really awful experience for me at the time. It no longer is. It's totally not a big deal anymore in my life, but I'm 37 years old now. So fast forward 20 years later, and about 7 years ago is when it kind of dawned on me, like, this is silly, the stigma that's associated with it, the way in which people are made to feel once they're diagnosed, all of that shame, that trauma. It really causes a trauma experience after that initial diagnosis. And I thought, none of that is actual representative of my experience in my life and what I've really witnessed in terms of relationships and such. And so why is that? Where's that disconnect? And I thought, well, if it's not out there and somebody's not messaging that, I need to be the one to do that so that people know, like, it will be okay. Not to sound cliche, but that's truly the long-term message of all of it.
And that's what I love, because as you just said, there's so few resources. And one of the things that is so heartbreaking that I see in my clinical practice is people coming in that have just been diagnosed with anything that's STD related. And there's this shift where all of a sudden their self-esteem drops and they see themselves as broken or flawed. And then this follow-up question is always, not only what am I going to do next, but also how do I maintain relationships and have a healthy sex life?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's the immediate paranoia, is that no one will want me. I'm never going to be able to find a partner or partners. I will never have a healthy sex life or an enjoyable sex life. I'll have to settle. And none of that is actually factual of what actually has to happen when you're actually living it and living that experience. But if you get stuck in that mindset, it's very easy to like embody that. For the longest time, I thought, yep, I'm deserving of this treatment. I'm deserving of the shaming of the jokes, of the like, you know, everything, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except for herpes that stays with you for life. And herpes is the glitter of STDs. I mean, some of that stuff, it's like you hear it over and over and over again, and you really think, okay, well, yep, I must be trashy. I must be a whore. I must be damaged. And it just does not have to feel that way. You know, like I've never had a partner, actually, truth be told, who has cared that I have a long-term infection that they could potentially contract. And I've even transmitted it to other people, not ours, but I have transmitted it in the past, and it has not caused a hindrance into my sex life. Like, my sex life is good and well, and, you know, thanks for asking.
So let's kind of break down a couple things that you just said there, because I think there's a couple really important points. So one of the things I've tried to drive home is that, in general, and weigh in on your thoughts about this, in general, I've tried to just get people to, this is my word, chill out about coming in contact with quote unquote things, because we live in a world where it's only sex that we see infections as being stigmatizing and especially heinous. Because, you know, if you're, and I've said this before, if you're, if a coworker or, you know, whatever, a sick baby, a dirty doorknob, whatever it is, if you're at home on your couch, crapping your pants, stuff running out of your nose, unable to leave the couch for a week, we're all like, that's cool. We get it. Sorry to hear about that, but you're not stigmatized or seen as dirty. But if you get something sex-based, that's also a virus and infection, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, different story. What's that about?
Well, right. And it's, and I mean, that's exactly the point. And it goes even a little further, is when somebody, like you said, is at home, super sick, crapping their pants, like we bring them chicken noodle soup. You know, we might like leave it outside their door, knock on it and run away. Like, I don't want to be a part of that right now.
But we still brought them soup. Yeah.
But we still cared about them. We had empathy for what they were experiencing, right? Because we're not looking at how did they get it. That's where the baseline for all of this is. Because like you said, the dirty doorknob, nobody says, well, you apparently didn't count your ABCs when you left the movie theater and left that public bathroom and you didn't wash your hands for long enough, and shame on you, you did something bad. There's no inherent assumption that the behavior, that you did something to cause this, that it's your fault. When in reality, like, everything has risk. Everything we do has a certain level of risk, and we assume that. In theory, we're hopefully aware of a lot of those risks, but this is when we're talking about sexually transmitted infections and diseases. That's that area where people just have no idea. They think like, oh yeah, I'm going to share my body with someone else. We're going to exchange bodily fluids and skin cells and be intimate on such a level, but there should be no risk, and I'm just going to walk away and everything's fine. And sometimes that is the case, but the likelihood is actually the vast majority of people contract an infection. So why are we all so freaked out about it? Like, I get it. I don't want a cold. You know, I don't want to get sick at all. Like, even when I fly, I just flew into DC today and I took airborne and I took like stuff to make myself feel better and things, or just in case. Like, I took some preventative measures, but if I still catch a cold, I'm not going to be angry about it. I'm not going to look for who was the culprit who sneezed on me in the airplane, you know?
Yeah. And that's interesting, because I was digging deeper, because this is a topic that's really important to me. I mean, anything that is really stigmatizing in our culture and disempowers people becomes something that I try to become an activist around. And this is one of those things where I'm still really frustrated with how we culturally handle this. So I was doing some digging around, and one of the things I read that I thought was really fascinating was, historically speaking, there was a time when things like herpes weren't stigmatized. It was just seen as like annoying or like a skin condition, quote unquote, like something dermatological. And that through history, it slowly then took on a different tone, I guess is the word.
Yes, for sure. And there's a couple of theories behind that. But yeah, for the longest time, whether you had herpes on your mouth, on your hand, on your arm, on your genitals, it was all just diagnosed as a skin condition. Like, it was just herpes. It wasn't HSV-1 versus HSV-2, cold sores versus genital herpes. It was just herpes blanket. And there really wasn't this hysteria around it in order to treat it. Some of the theories are around the initial, like in the 1960s, when they were first able to differentiate between HSV-1 and HSV-2 on tests. And then at that point in time, the the folks manufacturing antibiotics or antivirals came out and said, like, oh, well, hey, we see that there might be a need for this because millions and millions of people have this infection. Let's make them really nervous about this infection. Let's make them think it's something that they need to treat and manage. And then we're going to market them this product that they're going to manage their infection with. So that's one angle. And I think it's a little more intersectional. It's a little more complex, multifaceted that, but that certainly played a part.
All right, we're going to take a moment away, listen to some jams. But when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Janelle Marie Pierce about STDs and STIs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And tonight we're talking to Janelle Marie Pierce, the executive director of the STD Project, about STDs and STIs. So, Janelle, what do you think about the theories that weave in online dating apps and hookup culture as to a component of, I mean, definitely there's tons of STD and STI shaming on the dating and sex apps, along with a lot of other kinds of problematic shaming. But leaving that piece out quick for a moment, do you think that they are part of the problem with the rise in STDs and STIs? And is there also a rise?
I love that question. So two separate questions here. First of all, correlation does not equal causation. Right. That's the biggest, like, of course, there are now dating apps. And of course, the actual number on the statistics, the actual number of new infections per year that are reported is higher, according to the CDC. But when you look at the fine print, any kind of statistics, you always have to analyze any kind of graph, any kind of picture and information you're given. You have to say, what are they trying to tell me and what are they trying to push and which angle are they going at? Because even the CDC says those numbers are actually quite a lot higher, probably, because these are only the reported infections. And it might be that more people are getting tested. Maybe our public service announcements and all the awareness and education we're doing is encouraging more people getting tested. So there could be the same number of infections, but now we're just identifying and reporting them more because they're actually going and getting testing and diagnosis and that kind of thing. So we don't know all those answers exactly. So it doesn't necessarily, like, yes, year over year, the number of reported cases has been increasing. And now there are dating apps, but people were hooking up way before there were dating apps.
Yeah,
people
right?
In the 80s and 90s, like at bars.
Sex was happening.
And
yeah, right?
I know. Like, come on. This wasn't like, at that point in time, they blamed it on disco. It was the disco era, the movement. You know?
People are dancing. It's a problem. And now it's the apps.
Exactly.
God bless it.
I mean, before that, it was like, you know, in the 60s, all the hippies. I mean, there's always like an older generation saying it's because of this new stuff and we're all going corrupt and we're all getting bad and naughty. And it's not conducive. It's not helpful because it really doesn't point us in a constructive, thoughtful, like, here's what the relative risk is. Here's what the actual reality is of having partnered intimate sex and what we want to do and how to reduce those risks. I mean, just talking from a practical perspective instead of this blame and shame and finger pointing. It's silly.
Yeah, because that's also what I see will happen sometimes. I've seen that in my own social networks where someone tests positive and part of the quote unquote outcome is them trying to figure out who gave it to who. And it's like, why is that the relevant piece here? Like, contact your partners and whatnot, but the blame game of who started, who gave it to who, which we could never clearly figure out. Like, who's getting tested hour by hour, day by day? That's very rare, right? So that's an interesting thing to watch. But let's move forward and talk quickly about dating. So what tips would you give? Because that's one of the things that comes up a lot is, you know, I'm recently diagnosed. I have a chronic STI and I'm not sure how to handle this while reentering or being in the dating world. What tips do you give?
For sure. And I think people just need to take their time, like, and not rush themselves and give themselves some grace, you know, and to process and walk through, like, why do I feel this way? Why am I so reticent and nervous about the outcome and what somebody might say? Because when you think about somebody turning you down because of your infection, that really has nothing to do with who you are, but we're so petrified of that because no one wants to experience rejection in general. Right. So that's really what that overall fear is about. But when you explain it in that way, people are like, oh, that's right. Yeah. Like, maybe I'm not good enough in bed. Maybe I don't make enough money, like whatever else it could be, the myriad of reasons why people get turned down. And this could just be one of them. But a lot of it's just about communicating in an effective, thoughtful, like simplistic kind of way, like making sure that you disclose before putting someone at risk. And then people choose to, there's like two schools of thoughts when you talk about disclosing to a potential new partner. Some people put it right out on their dating app. Like if you study the number 437-737 on any dating app, even if it's not like a specific to STIs, dating app like Positive Singles, that spells out herpes on the keypad.
Oh.
So that's like a an indiscreet kind of like hush-hush way of kind of letting people know and kind of putting it out there. Some people just put it plainly on their profile.
Well, wait, like, let me ask you a quick question about that. So are you of the mind that the person that is positive, it's their responsibility to disclose? Or is it, would you put it on the person, it's the other's responsibility to ask? Because I've spoken
That's
to people,
a really great question.
Especially from the HIV positive world, that have said, I'm no longer willing to take responsibility if I'm on meds, I'm undetectable, I'm not taking responsibility for that disclosing anymore.
Well, so there's two things. One, if you don't disclose and you do have an infection that you could transmit to someone else, then that is an act of sexual violence. So that is a non-consensual act. That's my belief and how I approach it. However, sexual responsibility is a multiple way street. And I think it is not just the onus on the person who's infected, it's or who has the infection. I hate to say like the person who's infected, that language kind of sounds weird, but the person with an infection, it's also the responsibility of the individual who's engaging in the new activity with a new partner and to say and ask those questions. And if they weren't being that thoughtful about it, then they have to understand that, well, they put themselves in some risky situations or they added a different level of risk that maybe they weren't willing to accept or understanding at that time. But it's not just like one person's fault.
I love that, right? Because it's
all
like
of them.
On one hand, it's informed consent, and true informed consent means you're disclosing whatever someone might engage in and come in contact with. But then I also like the care and compassion where if you're having sex with someone, there's also this element of like, we're all in this together. And I also want people to be accountable for their own sexual health and to ask all sorts of questions. And then the other piece is, I also try to weave this message of care and compassion where I say to people, if someone discloses to you that they have an STI, first thing you should say is thank you. Like, thank you for caring enough to disclose that to me. Like, thank you for being that vulnerable and transparent.
Mm-hmm. 100%. 100%. I couldn't have said it better myself. Exactly. Because, I mean, anytime anybody tells you anything about them that puts them in a vulnerable position, like the nicest response, even if you're not okay with that and that's not going to work for you, which everyone has that right to make that decision about anything under the sun that isn't going to fit and be a good fit for you and what you want in a relationship or in a partner and an intimate activity, whatever. But either way, that person is putting themselves in your hands to say, like, this is something that's personal to me, and then to share that. Right. I mean, that in and of itself, like, we have to appreciate that. I think that's a wonderful way of saying, like, yes, absolutely, thank you. And then you can decide, like, it's totally okay. Anyone who's listening, if you're not ready for that and that's not a thing that you're interested in or willing to accept and you're not sure about it, that's okay. You have that right. You have that choice. And I support that. You know, but the finger pointing is what just isn't very helpful. And then the thing is when you contract an infection, you don't know where it comes from. You very rarely can ever exactly pinpoint it down. And that's the hardest part, is people think that they'll be able to know and tell. And that's where that sexual responsibility comes back around full circle of taking ownership of what's happened and what's been going on. And I'm not talking about assault or, you know, any sort of actual violence, intentional sexual violence. But when you're actually two consensual or multiple consensual partners engaging, and then something does occur that's not advantageous or not, of course, what you were hoping for, then that's still part of your responsibility.
Beautiful. Janelle Marie Pierce, where can people find you?
At the STD Project. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the places, anywhere, YouTube, anywhere you look up the STD Project, and you'll find me in social media as well as the website. That's at thestdproject.com.
Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. We got our question of the night posted up on our Loveline IG page. So weigh in on that. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Y'all know I love you when I put down my split pea soup so I can talk to you about these DMs. Because trust me, it would not put it past me to just let some music and dead air come on because I'm not done eating my split pea soup. Stuff is really good, I'm not going to lie. It's like, it's good. Okay, question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is about narcissistic abuse. Have you ever dated someone heavy narcissist? Again, this isn't meant to shame anybody. We're on the narcissistic spectrum. It's often a result of trauma. We're all struggling with these dynamics, but we want to hear from you. So keep it compassionate as always. And then, of course, we'll be we'll be doing some Freak on the Streaks and a little couples therapy. But right now, it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. This is a good one. I left my girlfriend after reading her text messages. Stop there. Because what's amazing is the question goes on as though there's nothing wrong there. Like, it's just what happened was, you know what I mean? But we're going to stop there for a second. Dad's pulling the car over, right? Raw. I'm going to turn around in my driver's seat. Y'all, stop reading each other's text messages. I'm only going to say this once a week now, because I think I say this every night. Date people you can trust and are worthy of learning to trust. Because if you trust someone, all's well. And if you don't, you shouldn't be in the relationship. You're going to eat away at each other. It's not going to work. And so if you're dating people that are worthy of trust, practice it. And if you're not, get out. Because a lot of times we're just projecting our own insecurity and we're living in a world and helping sustain this idea that everything's a threat. Everything isn't. There are some bad people out there that would cheat on you, but I'd rather you hang in there and deal with something when there's something to deal with. You'll be okay. Like, you'll be okay if you found out that was happening. You'll deal with it. But also a bigger message, stop cheating. All right, I digress. So you left your girlfriend after reading her text messages that she sent to her ex-husband. Okay, the text messages from her were asking him if he missed having sex with her. Uh-huh. Then one message from him said, well, you were darn sure intent on performing oral the other night in my truck. Pulling the car over again. Yeah, that's hard to hear. So I'm going to empathize with you. That's unfortunate. That's not going to feel good. She then replied, she then replied, and you refused. Got it. When I confronted her after moving my things out of her house, she said I read the messages wrong and that since nothing happened, it wasn't cheating and that I was wrong for leaving and doing so because I walked out on our son. Was I wrong? I mean, look, I don't know how to weigh in on that. She's claiming you misunderstood what you read in the text messages. What you're quoting as to what you read is hard to misunderstand. Like, I don't know any other interpretation other than that, than what you interpreted. So if it turns out that this person was cheating on you and won't own it, it might be time to go. Because what I would have preferred you say is, you know, I read it. I shouldn't have read it. I talked to her about what I found because it was uncomfortable. We talked it out. She said, unfortunately, that is true. I'm sorry you had to find that. I'm sorry I did that. I apologize. Here's how I'm going to take accountability, blah, 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 blah. And then you'd say, we worked it out. I'd say, well done. But if she's saying you misread it and I'm not going to own it and you shouldn't move out, I'm on the fence with that one, because again, I don't think cheating's a reason to leave someone. I think cheating's a sign that we need to talk about what's going on. Cheating's a horrible solution, but the stats show us most people actually do cheat. So sadly, that is a common occurrence. So we have to get better at learning how to deal with it. Monogamy is very difficult. So if you really love this person, you have a child together, when in doubt, stick around and talk it out and work it out, because again, I don't think that's the most egregious thing on the planet. Again, I'm not saying it's okay. It's never okay. It's quite toxic. It's injurious. It removes all trust. But maybe stick around and talk it out more if she'll take accountability. Because I don't believe that there's a way to misread what you just said you found. That's pretty black and white. And if she won't take accountability and keep saying you're misunderstanding, then maybe it is time to go. Because again, we only offer trust to those that are worthy of trust. And that does not sound that. And if she doesn't want monogamy, she needs to tell you, you know, but that's not okay. So you got my support in that way. Do we have enough time for another one? It's a long one. Yeah. Okay. No. Okay. So let me just land with this one. A lot of these are people trying to figure out what to do with having been cheated on. And I want to put the accountability on the people that are cheating. It's a solution to a problem. Talk it out. Is the sex you're having not the kind of sex you want to have? Do you no longer want to be together? Are you interested in opening it up? Like, whatever it is, own that. Don't leave damage in the wake of all of this. You know, it hurts people. All right, slide in the DMs. It's brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, a little couples therapy. See you back in a minute.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, time for some couples therapy. So, of course, we've got our other resident couples therapist, Rebecca Ashida. Rebecca, what's going on?
How are you? I'm doing great.
Good. So I was in my clinical practice this week, and a topic that came up more than once and also in my DMs was this whole concept of whether or not it's okay, and if it is, how to tell a partner that they've, quote unquote, put on weight, and is that something you can bring to your partner? What are your thoughts?
Ooh, it's a tough one. I'm going to go with
never a good idea to do that.
Okay.
Typically, the person who maybe has put on the weight already knows they've put on the weight, and maybe they don't feel good about it themselves. So you telling someone they need to lose weight is probably going to backfire.
Yeah, that's actually that's my stance as well. I think I understand the struggle from both parties, but I think it falls under the category of it's not going to go well, and it's also something you can't take back, and you might be further, as you said, traumatizing or creating a trigger that someone is already personally struggling with in themselves and also just being a person in our culture, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, it can be really injurious to the couple. It's a very touchy subject. Like, if I were to look back on my own life after being pregnant, and if my ex-husband said, hey, you know, you need to drop some pounds, I think that would have been very painful and triggering to me, because I already knew that it was something that I needed to do for myself. So it probably would create a lot of conflict and a lot of, you know, pain, you know, self-esteem issues, probably checking yourself out in the mirror a lot, maybe feeling less sexual towards your partner. It could have a lot of ramifications.
And how about also this, just looking at it conceptually, number one, talk about conditional love, because it kind of has that message like, I love you as long as you look a certain way. Right. And we can't promise that. We're going to age. We're going to maybe have disabilities. We're going to have illnesses. Our bodies are going to change, and maybe we want them to change. Maybe we don't. But no one can promise that a specific body type, whether it's one you met us with or we've achieved down the road, that it's something we can keep forever.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. It's, you know, I feel like it's a very challenging thing, because we want our partners to be honest with us about things, but we also have to be mindful about things that are going to hurt our partners and what are things to share and what are things not to share. I think that's always important, because we want to be transparent and honest, but I don't always think it's great to be 100% honest.
So what do you think about this? Yeah, 100%. And what do you think about this idea? Would you agree or not agree that if you're struggling to find your partner attractive, that that's essentially your own individual journey and struggle, and that it's, would you say it is or is not your partner's job to be attractive for you?
Oh God, that's such a tough one. I mean, look, it's the kind of thing too. Like, if you know your partner has bad breath before you're about to have sex, you tell him to brush your teeth.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
always.
Yeah, you would. I would.
Always.
So I don't know. Look, the bottom line is there are certain things that aren't attractive, and so that's a really difficult thing, because sometimes it's about you, but sometimes it's about someone changing in certain ways, and you're not as attracted, and you can't really change the way you feel.
Right.
So then it becomes a difficult point. Where, you know, this comes up in therapy, like you're saying, all the time, like people discussing this and maybe saying very painful things. Luckily, there's a therapist there to process it.
That's right.
You know, and that's where it gets easier. But I feel like there are things you can't take back once you've said them.
Yeah, because I know me personally. I ride the fence as to what I would want. So if I'm in a relationship with someone, I do want to feel desired. I also, because of the work I do, I'm all about body positivity and health. And so I'm not open personally to that conversation. Like, I won't promise a certain body type. My body type changes. There's days where I meet the gym culture ideal and I'm very muscled and lean. There's other times where I'm thicker and rounder. I'm happy with all the different stages and ways my body shows up. And I know when I'm dating someone or dating someones, I bring it up really early on that I'm not really open to hearing about that and that I promise nothing.
You know what, though? I have to tell you something. I really love that about you, and I think that's so healthy. I think the reason why I have a sort of thing in my head that goes, ooh, which way to go, is because I grew up always feeling sort of like weight was such an important thing. And I struggled with my weight and still sometimes feel like I do. So I think that kind of changes a bit of the perspective of how I would want someone to come at me with it too.
Right.
Or would I want them to? Like, there's a part of me that would understand if someone says, hey, Rebecca, why don't you drop a little bit of weight? But, like, I'm not okay with it. Does that make sense?
100%.
Because I think of the way I feel about myself. that ties in with it as well.
So maybe an interesting early dating, early marital conversation, like, hey, we're here, we're attracted to each other, there's a lot of chemistry. Maybe yes. important for couples to say, you know, down the road, do we want to be the kind of couple that discusses changes in desire and attraction and our thoughts on the other's body? Or do we want to be the kind of couple where we make that an individual struggle and we don't bring that forward? I mean, what an interesting
I think that's such an amazing thing to discuss. And one that I don't hear of often when people talk about premarital counseling or whether they're in relationship, like it's something that comes up and maybe hurts another person and then it's discussed versus like, hey, how do we approach this?
Right.
If it comes up.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's such a good point.
Yeah. I'll have to start bringing that into the discussion I have with early couples when they first come in.
You yeah. know, like, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Like, how are we going to handle, you know, in-laws? How are we going to handle lack of sexual desire? And also now add to it, how are we going to handle changes in our bodies, which we all have to expect to have happen in some capacity at some time based on, again, injury, illness, medication, birth,
hormone
aging,
changes. Hormone, I mean, menopause. People go through menopause around. Yeah. All of that changes your body.
That's
makes it more difficult to lose weight, you know?
100%. And I know me, like when I'm traveling, there are times where I have no days off because of clinical practice, my radio show, and I'm traveling on the weekends for my book and lecture tour. And I'm not able to move my body as much as I want, right? Because I'm all about exercise. It's healthy for everyone to move their body. I'm not able to move. I'm not able to have access to the kind of foods that make me feel good. And so you come home different.
Right.
All right. Well,
right,
there it is.
Right.
There it is. Well, thanks, Rebecca. Ashita, where can people find you?
They can find me at www.rebeccaashita.com. That's where I'm at.
All right. And also here every Thursday doing some couples therapy with me. Thank you so much. Coming up next.
I'm so excited.
We're going to be doing a little Freak on the Streets. And of course, our question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. Weigh in on that. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On channel Q.
All right, question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG beat. Excuse me. Oh my gosh. It's that time of the night, huh? You know where it is. Question of the night's on our Loveline IG page. Hit us up with your answers and thoughts. But now it's time for some question. Oh no, wait. It's time for Freak on the Streets. It's time to go to bed.
Freak on the Streets.
It's time for bed. It's what it is. All right, what do we got tonight?
How do I feel more connected to things or people or communities I care about without forcing it?
How do I feel more connected to communities I care about without forcing it? Social media is a really powerful way for people to fully immerse themselves and connect to different communities. There's also Facebook groups, but the way to feel most connected and most part of something is to spend some IRL, in real lifetime, go to events. I mean, that's what's cool about some Facebook pages and also websites is they post events and meetups. Participate, you know, make connections with others face-to-face, exchange phone numbers, spend time with them. But you really got to show up. It's basically about showing up, participating, maybe finding a role within the community or the movement, making friends. That's what's really important. There you go. But quickly, I want to talk about something. It's called I'm Listening. It's a campaign, and it's part of National Suicide Awareness Week, which starts next week. And this Sunday, September 8th, starting at 7 a.m., we're going to be talking about destigmatizing mental health and also suicide prevention. You can listen live on Channel Q, but also on all of our other Entercom stations, Jack, K-Rock, K-Earth, AMP. And 9 a.m., I'll be jumping on as part of a panel talking about, as I said, destigmatizing mental health and also suicide prevention. So join us, check in. We're going to talk about little tips and tricks. Also got some stuff posted on my IG, Facebook, and Twitter. Coming up next, question of the night. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, time for question of the night.
Question of the night.
Tonight's question is, have you ever dealt with narcissistic abuse? What happened? I want to just caution, we're doing this with full love, care, and support. I want to honor the vulnerability with which you are all answering this question. So I just kind of frame it that way. Thank you for those that were willing to participate. I'm hoping that those that are listening can learn more about themselves and maybe the relationships they're in as well. Have you ever dealt with narcissistic abuse? Someone said, when we got together, he praised me endlessly, made me feel exceptional. He was considerably older than I was. We met through work. He was highly respected. Then whenever we didn't agree, he would try to emotionally manipulate me by calling me all his praise, by calling all his praise into question. Lots of, I guess I was wrong about you kind of statements. In conflict, he would belittle me, shame me. He'd end the relationship if I suggested we'd talk more after we calmed down. Afterwards, he'd apologize, try to make it up. He went as far as pursuing therapy, but not for his own narcissistic behavior. After a few major fights, I ended it for good. He tried hard to start the relationship again. He's since blocked and deleted me. I'm glad I'm out of it, and I'm still working through the residual emotional trauma and trust issues. And there it is. It's the residual trauma and trust issues that we carry forward. I mean, that's what happens, sadly, is we date people that have certain personality types or dating styles, and unfortunately, the newer relationships, aka the next relationship, is the one that has to bear the burden of that. So I appreciate you, you know, seeing it the way you see it, and gosh, do the work you got to do to be okay to be in the next relationship. Someone else said I left because she wouldn't commit to me long-term by marrying me because she was afraid of being trapped. But within 2 weeks, she had someone else and acts like I never meant anything to her. And she buys this girl a cheap ring. Oof, there's a lot in that one. Someone else said my ex would always mumble under his breath that I was the better looking of the two of us and that I was the bigger catch. He always said it with resentment. As the relationship wore on, I could clearly see that he was competing with me and trying to put me down in subtle ways, primarily by making me feel unimportant or insignificant. I was being undermined and I didn't even know. I mean, that's really powerful. You point out a few really important words: competition, being made to feel unimportant and insignificant, undermined. Someone else said, I wish I had known that, yes, this person was trying to break me down. That he did covertly hate me and was actively trying to chip away at my self-esteem, to get me to doubt myself, to trip me up and throw me off my game. I wish I'd known that this was all deliberately done by him and he saw it as a game of conquer and control with zero regard for the effect on me. Whew, I felt that one in my whole body. Someone else said, I've completely moved on. I'm with someone who cherishes me and treats me amazing. And that's what I hope for everyone, right? A healing relationship that can kind of eclipse and override everything that happened before. Because remember, it's hard to sometimes feel like we have a lot of worth and value depending on what possible minority status you might have in our culture. And it's easy to sometimes feel like you don't deserve more or deserve better, but dig deep and try to find a place from which you realize you do, because if not, you can get into these really horrible relationships and it's really hard to realize that you need to get out. So Nelson, my narc ex is still out there manipulating everyone. The only people that see through his BS are me and the cops that have seen him drunk and violent. Whew. Someone else, initially after our breakup over a year ago, people were on my side, but my narcissist ex turned literally over a dozen people against me. And not only do they think I was lying, but my narcissistic ex flipped the script and started accusing me of being abusive. Bam. I mean, that's the ultimate form of horrible gaslighting, right? Saying that you were the abusive one. I've actually been in relationships like that as well. So this is what this is about. You know, I want you guys to hear the key terms in all this. People that are gaslighting you, people that are undermining you, people that are trying to break you down, people that are not building you up. I mean, a really important qualifier for a healthy relationship is someone who's on your side, someone who wants the best for you, someone who celebrates your success and speaks to your best from their best, right? Anything less than that is toxic and not healthy, no matter how attracted you are to them, no matter how much physical or sexual chemistry. I want everyone to want more. Thanks for those that participated. We don't have time to read any more, but thank you all for your vulnerability. Coming up next, we're going to slide back in those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Come on, Beyonce. Time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore it with confidence. All right, here we go. So, Dr. Chris, I was with my boyfriend for 6 months, and he broke up with me because he didn't feel the same. It was quite out of the blue for me, so I was devastated, truly heartbroken, because I loved this guy. So I begged for him back, constantly trying to talk to him, call him, voicemails, texts, and I just couldn't stop myself. I turned into someone I was not. I ignored him when he told me to stop. I feel bad for it looking back. It was almost harassing. It wasn't almost. It actually sounds like it might have been full on harassing. Now it's a couple of months later and I'm actually over him because I haven't seen him in a while. I feel awful about how I acted. Constant feelings of guilt, embarrassment, and how I lost all my self-respect. How can I heal from this shame and move on? First off, I'd say I just want you to kind of call out fully what it was. You know, when someone says that they don't feel the same about you, it's a gift. I don't want people to misrepresent and maybe staying something they're not wanting to be in. And it's really hard to hear, but dating, even for as long as 6 months, is an exploratory process. And this person got to a point where they realized that the chemistry wasn't really there for them or the compatibility. And it's a very loving thing to let someone know that versus just disappearing. So it's really important in our culture right now, especially in terms of talking about boundaries and consent and whatnot, that when someone tells you they're not interested, that you hear them and we back off and we back away, that we don't keep trying to force them in, that we don't keep pursuing them, because it really does fall under possible sexual harassment and harassment most of the time. So when someone says they're not interested, it's really important that we say, I hear you. That's very disappointing, but I'll honor that. And we just move on, right? So I just want to kind of call that out, that to continue to call them, text them, and try to manipulate them back or drag them back, it's not in their best interest, and it's also not in yours. I want you to be with someone that wants to be with you, someone who feels like the interest, compatibility, and chemistry and all that's there. And I'm glad that you're now free to find that. As far as the, you know, getting over the shame, that comes from taking accountability. If you realize that you understand what you did wrong and you promise yourself to be better and you maybe even apologize to this person, you're allowed to absolve yourself of all that and just kind of let it go. So the lingering shame might be because maybe you haven't fully let go, or you see that capacity is still in you, or you might be willing to do that again. So really just kind of work through that. You had your chance to apologize, though. I don't know that you want to circle back. After you trying to send all those messages, it might feel unsafe for you to reach out again to try to use him for you to feel better. So you might have to do the apology just, you know, with yourself, to yourself, which can, for many people, be really moving and healing. All right, y'all. Sliding DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore it with confidence. That's our show. We'll be back on Monday, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern. Check us out, though. I'm listening this Sunday, September 8th at 7 a.m., and then I'll be kicking it off at 9 a.m. on all of our stations. Y'all have an awesome weekend. Have a good night.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.